Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter, we shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Yes, we most certainly do love our land. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the East Anglians EDL Radio Show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. East Anglians EDL Radio Show, the official voice of the EDL. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I was in a bit of a tiz was because I had issues calling in. I couldn't get through. So it was at the very last moment, about 2 minutes spare, I just managed to get myself live and on into the studio and do the things like I would normally do. So I'm a little bit on the spot this evening. But it doesn't matter, you know, as long as we're rolling, that's the main thing. Because we just love to be able to get information out to all you great people out there. And I see the chat rooms slowly but surely filling up, which is always a blessing. Good to see you guys. And British News, I'm coming out my old mate Army, and we got Darren Ward. Good to see you, Darren. Always a Dodgy Dave. Oh, I love that name, Dodgy. It's absolutely a classic. Eric Kyle, always good to see you, Eric. And of course, we got our very own Red Fox blogger with Kel. Ream Soldier, it's always a blessing to see you. And Stealth, yes. And just to let you know, we've got Sue from New Mexico who's listening in on her phone device. So with that, I'll come back in the studio. I thought I'd do something a little bit different, come and say hello to everybody. But I have got someone who's, as I said, I was a little bit on the spot because... not being able to get through at the moment, and so I've been left a little bit out in the dry. But we've got a great show that's coming up over the weekend with one of our ROs, Glenn Saffer, and he's got something he wants to say, and it's a message he wants to get out, and that is what the platform of this radio show is for. For the important things that need to be said. With that, I'm going to bring one of my dear, dear close friends, Kel, onto the show this evening. Kel, I hope you're there. Good to see you.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I couldn't
Not after the best start, eh?
What a way to start the show. It was, everything started all right. It was just, I had about a minute spare when I finally got through. It kept putting me onto a wrong number. So this is ladies and gentlemen, these things we experience, being a radio host, and you do tend to panic a little bit, don't you, Kel?
I know that feeling very well.
Very much so, but still, we still done it on the skin of my teeth. I made the, otherwise, there might have been a little bit of dead air, wouldn't there, Kel? Was that? I don't know. It's a bit quiet when we've got airwaves that's live and you haven't got the host. But never mind. So how are you, Kel? It's good to see you. Thank you very much. I'm doing well.
Having a busy week.
Yes, well... You're a busy lady, aren't you, producing?
Well, you know, Islam, when you're on a crusade.
Well, yes. It's
not a 9-to-5 job.
You know, they do not like, Kel, they do not like the word crusade. It's used, it sends them into a tiz-was, don't they? They don't like it. Why? Because with the crusades, that was the only thing that stopped their scourge from many years ago. If it wasn't for people who did what they did at the time, then today we wouldn't have computers, we wouldn't be speaking and doing the things that we do to have the freedoms that's afforded to us. Because the people who laid their lives down to fight against the Islamic scourge is what Kel calls it. And it's a great word, isn't it, Kel? And mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what we've got to think about is, you know, people say, oh, we really shouldn't mention. Why? Because it offends the Muslims. Because we, at that time, we managed to push them back from the gates of Paris, wasn't it? That was how close it came to the world being dominated by Islam. Ladies and gentlemen,
well, you know,
this is history.
It really annoys me, too, in that I was listening to a documentary by Dr. Bill Warner the other day, and he touched on the Crusades, and he brought up the issue about the reactionary on the part of the Christians. The Crusades were necessary. It was when you think about the Muslim, the Islamic push towards into Europe, what choice do we really have except to push back? So, but I'm just keeping it simplified. However, our own churches have been making apologies for the Crusades ever since, and it makes us look weak, and it makes me feel weak when I feel that my representatives, which would be the church, I suppose, being a Christian as I am, that they would feel that they would have to apologize on my behalf for something that we had absolutely no doing whatsoever. We did not ask to be brought into any of the issues that Islam forced us into, and that continues until today.
Yeah, it's just, as you say, I'm like you, Carol. I get fed up with hearing these apologists of trying to explain away Crusades, because it wasn't the Crusades. They won't be having afford the freedoms what they have today if it wasn't for people who went out there to fight against this this Islamization, what was taking over the world. It has conquered land after land after land, hadn't it, Kel? And this is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But these days, they make excuses for it. Well, I'm not going to make excuses for my ancestors fighting a noble fight, because what we did was noble cause, ladies and gentlemen. What we've done was a noble cause. Yes, we do know that the history and the stories of certain things, certain groups of people did do associated with them. But this was a noble cause. And if it wasn't for people like themselves back then, today we wouldn't be discussing the history of back then, because we wouldn't have a history. History would have been stopped there in its tracks as such. We would still be living in the 7th century. The ideology with these people, that is what we would be living under today if it wasn't for brave, great people of the times. So, you know, before they get on their high horses and say this, that and the other, let's not forget the sacrifices people made to keep our lands free from this Islamic push that was of the times. So there you go. Would you not agree, Kel? I get on my high horse about it because I really feel very strong about certain things, and that is one of them. As you say, these apologists get really up my nose.
Well, they're giving away our legacy. They're giving away everything our forefathers fought for, that's for sure. I know that your family, your forefathers, certainly didn't fight, and you being an Englishman, I'm sure that you have forefathers, direct lineage that does go right back to the Crusades, and that I'm sure that they did not anticipate that they would be seeing what they're seeing today. I know that my father and my grandfather certainly didn't.
No,
not by a long shot.
You come from a military background, don't you? Kel comes from a military background. Your father was, what was he, Kel, now? I know we had a...
Yeah, he was in World War II in the Korean War, or the Korean conflict, as they refer to it. Korean has always been known
That's
as the forgotten
50s,
war.
Wasn't it, Kel?
That was
the 50s, yes. But mustn't forget people that served the... it's like the Unforgotten War, isn't it, that went on, and it raged, didn't it? For many years.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, as I say, the sacrifices was paid in them lands as well. But and thank goodness for people like your father and many others that did what they did for the queen, the country, and did what was right. You know, that's what it's all about. We're forever grateful for the people and the sacrifices, aren't we, Kel? You know.
Yeah, and we just keep appeasing and we keep appeasing and we keep appeasing. And as a matter of fact, on the Monday show, Tim and myself, we were discussing the issue of accommodation and reasonable. Is it reasonable? And we pretty much have concluded that no, it's not, because some of the issues that we touched upon entail the prayer rooms in the airports, the foot baths in the universities.
Yeah, I was listening to that show, wasn't I?
Very,
very good show, ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to it in the archives.
Oh, thanks, Jeff.
It was a very, well, it's why I called in, Kel, because I was really engrossed in what you and Tim was discussing. And this is, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we as radio hosts do like to go and listen to each other, and also to call in as well, and if something's been discussed that's quite topical, it's always great to have a little panel of us discussing them. And I think that was a great show you had, Kel, wasn't it?
Oh, it was interesting. It was an interesting focus. Now, we try to pick a topic. We will get together and, well, what are we going to do with this show this weekend? What should the theme be? And we kind of settled on accommodation. And the reason being is because there are yet more accommodating factors going on. I think one in particular that really set me off was this business with Marvel Comics and how they have replaced the old Miss Marvel. And anybody who's familiar with Miss Marvel will know that she is a warrior goddess and she dresses in the rather skimpy clothing. And Marvel Comics, in their infinite wisdom, they've decided that they're going to replace her with a Mausolima. And I'm looking at the picture of this Mausolima, and she's wearing a long, kind of like a bicycle shorts with leggings, a baggy T-shirt. She's got glasses on, and, well, she generally looks like one of the ugly stepsisters is what she looks like. Marvel Comics, they decided that because of their growing list of diverse readers, that they thought it would be a good idea to replace the old Miss Marvel, who was a sexual bombshell, and replace her with this Mausolima. And they included her family, and she's got the good old mom and dad, and the mom is wearing the hijab, and she's got a goofy sidekick friend, and he's a gingerhead, and he looks like he has never seen a shower. And then she's got the brother, I think it's a guy. I'm not too sure. There's a couple of them in there, and the one there's another, I assume, brother, and he's got the beard going on there.
Yeah,
it's just her name is Camilla, and the family is from Pakistan. Yeah, Camilla.
Oh.
Camilla with a K.
Okay, Camilla. Oh, interesting. Wow, my goodness me. So that was quite a bit of a discussion had about that then, Kel. Amazing. Just goes to show you.
Not so much
it?
On that per se, but just on everything in general and how upset that I'm personally becoming by this. And another thing that set me off was that issue that you folks are having over there in England, in fact, and the influx of the Roma coming over. And I was reading, there's an article, I think it was from the UK Daily Mail, and they had an expose on the Roma in this one particular neighborhood and how the inhabitants of that neighborhood felt that the Roma were being destructive and they were not integrating well into the community. And the chief complainants were from Pakistan. And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, so we've got some new immigrants from a slightly different background, coming into a host country. The residents of that host country are complaining, and they are immigrants from a vastly different background. So here we've got the Pakistanis complaining about the Roma in England. And I'm reading this, and I'm thinking to myself, what on earth is going on over there?
Confusion? Is that a word, I think? Is total confusion? By the sounds of it. It seems like they don't want them to take their place of what they've been doing. So they think that the Romas will, the Romanians will be taking their place or something. Maybe that's, I don't know, Kel. It seems very strange, doesn't it? We live in very strange times.
I just found it rather ironic.
Yes, 2014 will be once again the floodgates of this great sad nation will be let open for everybody to come in, and we're going to get all sorts of people. But what can you do when you get, the ruling that says that the host country has got to allow X amount of people in? My goodness me, if you could see in this country, Kel, you know, we're only a small island, for goodness sake. Any more people, this island's going to sink. You know, I'm hypothetically speaking, but how much more can a little nation like the United Kingdom put up with? Isn't it about time that people in power said enough's enough, the gates got to stay closed for a number of years? Let's deal with what we've got at this moment in time, and then we can talk about further immigration or whatever. I mean, it's wrong. I mean, we've got serious issues as it is. And my goodness me, can you imagine the hospitals? You're gonna find hospitals just closed down because of the whole force of what's going on. Different things like that. The infrastructure is going to start collapsing. It's quite obvious. Things like that happens because of an influx of too many people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just blowing smoke in the air, am I, girl? This is facts. This is what happens.
No, we're seeing it.
Infrastructure starts collapsing.
Well, your infrastructure as well, they're not keeping up with that. And we're actually having an issue with this sort of thing in my little community as well, is that our local city council, they want to invest more money into soft services, social services, of course. Meanwhile, our infrastructure is suffering, and there are a lot of very unhappy residents here who are saying that, you know, it's all very well and good to be a benevolent community, but we have to take care of what we have right here, right now. How can we accommodate new immigrants if we can't even drive down the road to get to the center in which to accommodate them? We're accommodating the new immigrants here, and we're not taking care of our own infrastructure. The infrastructure is a big thing with me.
Exactly.
I've said that word 14 times.
I hope you don't mind me, Kel. As Agador irritated, one of our guests sitting in the chat room says, we need to just shut out borders and tell these folks to solve their own problems in their own countries. And Agador irritated, I salute you on that, because I agree 100% with that. And that is what the discussion that myself and Gail were having. Enough's enough. How many times have we got to say enough's enough? But are there politicians listening? If they should be putting their middle finger up to these Europeans who make these rulings and say, spin on that. We're not having no more. We have got issues with what we've got in our own country at this moment in time because of treaties, this and that. Well, bugger the treaties, rip the treaties up. It's our nation that's suffering because of stupidness. You know, people making treaties, and they don't really understand the limitations of a country who's got host these people, who's got fine homes for them, and shortage spaces in hospitals and things like that. It's under pressure all the time. The National Service under pressure as it is. We're always hearing on the news certain hospitals having problems, this, that, and they don't know what this winter period is going to be like. Per se, you know, this is the warning sign. So you can imagine with an influx this time next year, you'll be finding that hospitals collapse under the force of what's being imposed upon them on their staff and that. You know, you can do something for so long, but after a while, as you say, things start collapsing around. It's about time that these people, you know, who makes these rules for the countries that we live in, you know, get their priorities right. You know, otherwise people are going to suffer. There's, you know, lots of people going to suffer through, you know, stupidity. Anyway, I've had my bit of a gripe about it. It's just I do feel very, very strong about immigration. And schools, yes, every car and schools.
Yeah.
I agree,
well,
they tell us.
They tell us we... Sorry, Jeff, I just stepped on you there.
No, you're okay, Kel.
They tell us that we need immigration because, of our aging population, that is always the most cited, which is fine. Okay, if we do in fact need immigration because we do have an aging population and we do need a new wave of taxpayers to help keep those services going... Very well and good. I'm fine with that. However, it's the caliber of the immigrant in which we're importing, and we're finding that a lot of these immigrants that are coming from the Southeast Asia areas in particular are not contributing to the greater good of the host country, and they are not getting jobs. They are coming over here, and they're actually living off welfare.
Exactly. Oh, Oh, that's great. But as I say, these issues are so, so important, aren't they, Gil, that we should be talking about them. And as I say, we've got, someone else, Cat Strangler 101, our very own Mr. Tim Burton. We've also got someone else who wants to, I don't know who coming first, whether it was... Mr. Tim Burton. Let's bring Tim in, and I think this could be Sue from New Mexico. I'm not sure, but just bear with me while I'll bring Cat Strangler 101, our very own Mr. Tim Burton. Welcome to the show, Tim. It's good to see you this evening.
Hopefully. Hello there, Jeff, and hello, Kel. Yes, lovely
hey,
to
Tim.
See you both. Hi.
I'm pinch hitting.
No, that's good. I'm so pleased because I was a little bit... a bit on the hop tonight, Tim, because I couldn't get through like I normally would. It kept reconnecting me to a different number, and the third time it managed to put me through. So I don't know, some interference, whatever it was, but I had about a minute spare.
Well done. Well, I had a problem where. The browser was refusing to let me connect to Blog Talk Radio at all, and I won't go into the technical details.
No, that's all right.
I threatened it with the appropriate size sledgehammer.
Oh, your hammer!
So,
thank goodness, at least you've made it. It's
indeed,
always a pleasure to
understand you're right in the middle of a conversation about immigration. And I'm just looking in the chat room to see how far it's got. I mean, which aspect of immigration were you on? I don't want to.
We were just talking about the way the gates will, in the very near future, Tim, 2014. I think it's about March or April. The floodgates are going to open. And we was talking about the Muslim community or a Pakistani community getting up in the air about it a little bit concerned.
So we were
having this discussion, wasn't we, Kel?
This is all to do with the Roma community, isn't it? The Roma coming over and upsetting the Pakistani businessman up in Sheffield. How ironic is that? And all the conversation that the various media interviewers have had with people in the street, they have absolutely no problem at all with saying, well, of course, we expect these Roma to be much better behaved than they have been to date and to do a lot more to integrate and assimilate. Funny how they never said anything like that when it was large numbers of Muslims immigrating, and any comment about... any form of integration or assimilation that they were or weren't participating in was being dismissed out of hand as racist, bigoted and Islamophobic.
And it's the typical stereotype type of thing that we always get from that side of the community, the whole thing, isn't it? So as to silence people for speaking out, but guess what? We do, as a radio show, we speak out against these issues, and we continue to, whether they like it or not, whether they want to call us this, call us that, whatever. We like to speak the truth on this show, and that's exactly what we will continue to do. So there you go. We were just going down the path, and we was getting a little bit irate with the way that politicians, our weak-kneed
jellyfish backbones, yes.
Yeah, it's a whole mouthful.
Right. I mean, the whole concept of letting in large numbers of Roma at this time when we have these problems, it is nothing short of well, I won't use the word suicidal because that sounds like we're over.
Actually, it was going through my mind as you was just bringing it up. I was going through my mind, suicidal of a nation to.
It's certainly folly of the highest
pure
order.
Folly.
Yeah,
pure
and
folly.
I personally think a way should be found in order to at least delay this, if not stop it in its tracks. Now I know the argument is that we are bound by our ties to the European Union and we can't
the treaties just, and all this. This is what we were discussing, Jim.
I'm sure that when something of this magnitude is likely to cause so many potential problems, I'm sure that somebody could invoke, turn it into an issue of national security and say, at least let's defer the whole exercise for 12 months or something like that while we look a little bit closer about exactly what we're doing to our country. Now, there no doubt loads of barrack room lawyers will be jumping up at this point and saying, no, you can't do that because we're part of the European Union and they'll overrule us. Well, personally, I beg to differ. All it takes is for the order to go out to border control and say, don't let these people in. If they come in, turn them around and put them straight back on the plane they came in on. And I believe it can be done. You need the political will, obviously. But if we don't start standing up for ourselves, we are going to find it extremely hard to, at any point in the future, to do anything much stronger. Like, I mean, we need to turn back the clock when it comes to the issue of human rights and all the rights that the terrorists and criminals enjoy, foreign terrorists and criminals in particular, seem to no account of the well-being of our indigenous community at all. And we need to get control of that. And ultimately, of course, we need to get out of the EU. But the very first thing we should do is when we're faced with something like this that's going to take place in the next couple of months or so, we should have a mechanism in place whereby we can say, let's just stop and think about what we're doing for a moment. Because it's quite plain to me that there is no possible advantage at this stage in where we are as a country in economic terms and with the infrastructure of our country already stretched to the limit. There's no possible advantage I could see on allowing large numbers of people in who are just going to go straight onto welfare and be a further drain on the welfare state.
That's exactly a point that I brought up just before you came on board, Tim, is that Jeff and I, when we were touching on that, we were talking about perhaps there is a need for immigration because of our aging population, but the caliber of immigrants that we are bringing in are not assimilating and they are not getting jobs, they're not creating jobs, they are living off the dole, as it were. They're on welfare. They're not contributing. These immigrants are not contributing. Today's caliber of immigrants are not contributing. What do we do to rectify that? Why do we continue to bring in immigrants from third world cesspools? Why are we not encouraging European immigration or Asian immigration, immigrants from China or Japan, for example? How come we're not encouraging the immigrants from Ireland, for example? Ireland is just full of eager young people willing to emigrate to Canada and work in the trades, but we're not recognizing their visas. So what is going on? Why the big push for these third world inhabitants?
Well, the very first thing that we should be doing is following the dictates of Confucius, who famously said, well, or is reputed to have said, when in a hole, stop digging. And that's why I think the very first thing we've got to do is put a moratorium on something that is going to be completely counterproductive to the kind of future that we want to see in this country, and then look at immigration as a whole and say, what you're saying, Kel, the caliber of immigrants, because I'm not against immigration per se, as I'm sure you're not, but it's the caliber of immigrants getting that goes straight onto the dole and are a drain on our welfare systems that has proved so much of a problem. Now, we know why it happened back in 1997 when Tony Blair first came to power and deliberately threw open the gates for immigrants to come in large volumes. And it was admitted by one of his underlings, whose name I forget at the moment, but somebody will remind me, who said that it was done as a deliberate tactic to rub the right's nose in diversity. Now, that
yes.
is nothing short of, I'd go further than say criminal. I'd say that's seditious and treasonous. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And I personally think Tony Blair should be held to account for it, as I have said many times before. But
other politicians, not just him, though. I mean, there's a long line of them.
I'd be happy to see him at the front
like
of the queue.
Like a conveyor belt full of them.
Yes. But the fact is that they brought in these people in order to completely change the demographic of our country. And at the moment, I won't say they've succeeded, because I don't think it's a term that should be measured in success, but they have done what they set out to do, and it's going to be down to us to pressure the next government that comes in to reverse the trend. Now,
I agree.
The fact that it can be reversed, I'm absolutely sure about. That is not a problem. In logistical terms, it can be done. It needs the political will. And
that's
it needs
the word.
It needs politicians with far more calibre than the group we already have. Now,
Henrys will never, you know, I'll be quite honest with you, I shouldn't really be doing a class thing, but the U-Heart Henrys can never see what's right for the nations. They go along in their Jolly Boys Cup, and the chappies will sort it out. We'll talk about this tomorrow in the bar. You can imagine this. This is the way they act, isn't it? The Jolly Boys Club. And while our country, it's like if you don't mind me saying, it's like I think of times of Rome when as Rome was burning, Nero was playing. Was it a violin? What was he playing? Harp or something?
Don't talk to me about violin playing.
Oh, yes, I must have. Yes, Kim's a bit touchy on his violin.
Violin players,
he's got the mental scars from it, haven't you, Tim? But we have got another caller that's been sitting patiently, but I'd like to just give a mention that, guys, if you want to take part in the discussion, and this is quite... I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but it makes myself and it makes Kel and it makes Tim very right with what's going on in our nations. So if you'd like maybe to take part in what we're discussing, and you're free to, it's your platform, please call in. If you've hooked up to Skype and you're a Blog Talk Radio user, you left click on the S button, which is a blue button which says S there, follow the prompts. When it says you want to speak to the host or do you want to just listen, you'll press 1 on whatever device you're on. If not, and you're outside the US of A, the number to call in is 001-858-777-5934. I repeat, 001-858-777-5934. So please do, because we do like people to call in and backball with us when we're discussing these issues. But what I was going to do, guys, as I say, we've come to the top of the hour, we just passed that a little bit, but what I want to do is, as me and Kel touched on, the Crusades. We was talking about the Crusades when the first part of our things that we were discussing, wasn't it, Kel? So there's a tune that come to my mind. I looked down and I thought, it's just appropriate for what we was discussing earlier. And of course, this is Anglo-Saxon. This is not a crusade. So, and the caller, as soon as we come back, we'll bring you in. Okay, so I know you're sitting there patiently, and thank you for sitting there. And we'll bring you in after this, and we're going for a quick break. This is not a crusade. Anglo-Saxon.
Forgive them, for they know not what they do. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade, but the march of the tides is starting to change. Sacrificed on a summer's day, the slaughter of the meek came under the streets. Now nothing can ever be the same. No, nothing can ever be the same. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. There's a line in the sand no man can cross. The deserts are yielding to the sea. The oasis of salvation lies within our reach. The children of tomorrow hold the key. The children of tomorrow hold the key. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. When three kings from afar follow the star, 2,000 years ago this was the sign. Now the east winds blow, the people should know. This is the sign of our times. 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 This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. With the wolves at the door, I can't take any more. This freedom is a heavy price to pay. The road to Damascus seems so far away. It's the battle for hearts and minds today. 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 This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade.
If you are sick and tired of listening to the lies you hear from politicians and the mainstream media about Islam, and you want to hear the truth about the crimes that are committed in its name in your country and all around the world, then please tune in to the East Anglian EDL radio show on blogtalkradio.com. On Thursdays, Fridays and Sundays at 8:30 GMT and 3:30 EDT. For analysis, updates and news about Islam without any of the lies and political correctness that you hear in the mainstream media, and for updates, news and information about the English Defence League, then come and join us on Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen to all our previous broadcasts at any time by visiting the East Anglian EDL Radio Show archive. The East Anglian EDL Radio Show, the official radio show of the English Defence League.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. I've done that for a little while, have I? Welcome back, everybody. But yeah, I've also got to thank Martin High for that little commercial for the show. It's absolutely awesome. Hopefully, in the very near future, we possibly have him on the show, and that'd be great, won't it, guys? You know, to hear the man behind that, the great voice, such a commanding voice. I love the way he does things and puts music, the dramatic effect of the music. Speaks volumes for who we are and what we're about. So welcome back, Tim. Welcome back, Kel. I was going to say, because, as I say, we've had this call who's been sitting for a little while, so I was wondering if we could bring this call. I think it's Sue from New Mexico. Yeah, caller, I think it's you, Sue. Go ahead. I know you've been sitting there patiently, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. It is. And hi, Kel, and hi, Tim.
Hi, Sue.
Hi, Sue.
I just had to call in on this subject because immigration is very close to my heart. And I was attacked by an illegal immigrant with a hunting knife. And when you are directly affected by these thugs and people who are coming in, you know, it never goes away, and you look at it in a whole new light. And as far as America goes, the United States, I want to tell you what has just happened here. Through a House investigation and a FBI, they found two immigrants. Now, these were immigrants Obama let in from the Middle East. And they had killed U.S. soldiers. They were al-Qaeda terrorists. And they were building bombs and getting ready to do things here in the United States. This just broke. And what is really disturbing, the whistleblowers have said that there are dozens and dozens of these al-Qaeda operatives who have been allowed into the United States as immigrants who needed refuge, and they were on welfare here. All of these guys, they, just like in your country, the same thing. And, you know, I don't know how it used to be in your country, but in the United States after World War II, and they're still holding some people to this, to immigrate into the United States, you had to have a sponsor, you had to have a job, and when you got here, you had to learn about our Constitution and our language and basically assimilate, and that is gone by the wayside, and that needs to come back. But I have a friend in Scotland who is educated and wants to come into the United States, would be an asset to us. And they will not let him in. Yet they are letting in all these lowlifes. And another thing the United States is dealing with, we not only have the Middle East lowlifes who are coming in, we have in our southern border the drug cartels. Most of the people crossing our southern border are drug cartels and Hezbollah terrorists. And they are just really walking into our country. And so I just think we need to go back to that, pick people who will give an asset to our countries. You know, you've got a sponsor, you've got a job. This is where we have to go back to.
I agree, Sue. We've got away from that, you know, having sponsors before you was, you know, allowed to come into country, to know the language, to know the Constitution. But with the Obama regime, everything has changed. And, of course, we've got these al-Qaeda operatives said they want refuge and that. No wonder. We've probably got them in this country. As you know, this is a hotbed. Certain places, especially like Luton, is a hotbed of these extremists elements, and so, you know, I would find that you will probably have got the same case where you are as well, Sue. So we have got serious issues. We do need to get back to some of the basic things that we used to allow people into the country, you know, going back a time. I remember those days, Sue, very, very well, and so does Tim, and probably so does Gail. But it seems with the different regimes, which I call them, because that's the way that it feels with these, that they're letting these people come into dangerous people, a national a problem, basically, which, you know, it could flare up any time, couldn't it? Anything, you know, these people, as you said, Sue, had been killing American soldiers, maybe British soldiers, Canadian soldiers, we don't know. But it begs to differ. You know, why would they allow people of that calibre into that great country of yours, the same as we have here as well? So a very good point, and maybe the panel would like to discuss that. Maybe, Tim, you've got a few views on...
Yeah, well, I think I'd go back to what you were talking about just before the break and say you were talking about it in terms of class over here, and I don't doubt there's an element of that, but I think it was predominantly the decision by the Labour government in power at the time in 1997. I'm using 1997 as the benchmark for the UK because that's when a political decision was taken to open the floodgates, and it was done specifically to change the demographic makeup of the UK. I don't think that was particularly class-based. I think the Labour government just decided that they didn't like the fact that, as things currently stood, there was a hell of a lot more conservative, with a small c, conservative-orientated people in the country who would disagree with what the Labour government were doing the next time an election came round. So they thought, rather than change their policies, they'll change the makeup of the demographic content of the country by introducing a lot of people, putting them on welfare, who will then be predisposed to vote for the people who pay the welfare checks. And I suppose there must be an element of that in the United States, but I think it's more to do with, in the United States, with the overall policy that I'm sure Obama has, which is totally to break down the current stable stable constitution is the word I was going to use. I was looking for a phrase which sort of encompassed what I thought Obama wanted to do, which was totally break down the structure of the United States and remake it into something much more socialist, more totalitarian.
Yeah, Obama wants to break the United States as a superpower, and he believes in distribution, global distribution. He wants the United States to be brought down a few notches to keep in line with the other countries that are not as great. That's his plan. But Sue can certainly expand on that much better than I can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that there is hope. As you know, in the United States, there is a great political hoopla over Obamacare, and it's a disaster. Obama has lost a lot of his support. And what the Congress did, finally, they put at least a six-month moratorium stopping Obama's immigration program from the Middle East till they find out where the breakdown was. And they have proof that these two guys, I mean, they got the bomb-making things and everything, and plus, I didn't know, when a bomb goes off in Afghanistan, you know, or Iraq, wherever soldiers were, they collect pieces of that. And that goes into the CIA and the FBI. They worked, and they actually found the fingerprints of these two guys on some bombs that had killed three American soldiers in Afghanistan. So they have proof that they had killed American soldiers. Also, they were targeting some soldiers who had returned back to the United States from Afghanistan, that there is hope. There is at least moratorium, and finally our Congress standing up.
That's great news, actually, Sue, and it just goes to show that when the political will is there, things can be done. You were talking about a moratorium due to exceptional circumstances in the United States, and we've got a very similar thing here with what Kel and Jeff were talking about, with the potential of us being overrun with immigrants from Romania and Bulgaria. I mean, that's obviously not in the same category as the guys who have been picked up for murdering U.S. soldiers, but nevertheless, it's comparable in terms of the effect that it could have on national security in the country. And if it can be done over there, I see absolutely no reason why we shouldn't organize a moratorium over here until the problems that are becoming apparent get sorted out. I mean, you're talking about Obamacare. I know from what I've read that's a huge disaster, but the fact that there are people coming into the states that mean harm to citizens, to the military in the United States, well, okay, I can't say I'm entirely surprised, because if you let enough people in, undocumented immigrants and people whose background you really have no idea of, it stands to reason that amongst those people there will be people who mean harm to citizens and the military personnel of the United States. Now, that could all have been avoided if the United States had stuck to the same principles that they've had that worked very well up until, I don't know, fairly recently, I suppose, of having sponsors for people who want to come into the country, only accepting immigrants when they've been vetted. Okay, there are always going to be crises where it's the duty of a civilized country to take in some refugees in the event of a sudden crisis or a natural disaster, but to take people in on the scale that it's been happening under the Obama administration, where there's no check on the background of anybody who comes in, and in fact people from Muslim countries and other countries whose motives might well be questionable are let in without any further ado, whereas people like your friend from Scotland, who might well be an asset to, most likely would be a great asset to the country, they put all sorts of obstacles in their way. And it's the bigger picture where the administration is actually looking to break down the ability of the United States to be a superpower and just turn it into a third world backwater. And what's so frightening is how easily he seems to be doing it. When you've got the media that are complicit and an opposition which is virtually non-existent, it's just absolutely frightening how easily it can be done. And I can only hope that by the time you get to 2016, you will at least have a mechanism in place to eliminate some of the worst of the fraudulent practices that allowed Obama to come to power in 2008 and 2012. I'm talking about people who've been allowed to vote without photo ID. And, of course, we all know about how loads of dead people get onto the payroll and so on, and the voting machines which were rigged in favor of Barack Obama. I would hope that between now and 2016 that could be sorted. And by the same token, I would hope that over here, by the time 2015 comes around, we that is to say us in the EDL and associated counter-jihad movements are going to have a significant effect on what happens in the UK elections in 2015. But that's a separate issue.
Great point. That I was going to say, because as you guys know, I normally got to give a call back in. So I was wondering, we've got Kel, this is what we've got. This is a new Martin Hive. It's an EDL tomorrow today. This is the new one that's in the studio, isn't it, Kel? While I go for a quick break, I can load it in.
Is that the EDL Not Racist?
It's got an AA, EDL Tomorrow Today, Martin Hive.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sue, if you could sit with us, because it's been really great to have you, and we continue this conversation when I return. So I'm going to play this new Martin Hive. Thank you, Martin, if you're listening. Thank you so much for these great videos, and they're absolutely superb. So with that, we're going for just a quick break, and we'll be back, and won't have no more breaks after that then. So from I've stopped myself now. Anyway, if I'm digging a hole. Here we go. This is Martin Hive, EDL, Tomorrow Today.
Over 70 years ago, an evil supremacist ideology spread across the whole of Europe, bringing with it death and destruction. The towns and cities of Britain and Europe burned, and millions of people died in the fight to make Europe a peaceful and tolerant place. But because of the mistakes made by our politicians, our tolerance is now being used against us by a new invading army. An army that, with the help of Britain's weak, greedy and stupid government, is now gaining ground in this country because of the inability to deal with this threat by politicians from all three main political parties. This evil ideology is now creeping across this country, and it must be taught that, unlike our politicians, the people of Britain will never surrender. During the Cold War years, the British people faced complete and utter destruction, the death of every man, woman and child in this country, and we still said no to evil. We will never surrender to an ideology that tells its followers to slay the infidels wherever you find them and take them captive. Kill any infidels who fall under your power and fight with the infidels until there are no more. Our enemies think they know the British people, but they don't. They only know the greed, lies and stupidity of our politicians. Read the history of the British people and you will know who we are. Because these men are our fathers, our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers. And all throughout our history, millions of them have stood up to defend this country against evil. Our country, our culture and our families are our religion. And although we may be governed by cowards and fools today, tomorrow will be different. And together, with your help, we can make tomorrow today.
There you go. And I think Mr. Martin Hive sums it all up, what we talk about week in, week out. And he sums it up with the dramatic music going, and that's why we stand together. You know, we will never, ever surrender to any Islamic ideology, whatever, in this country, this nation. And I think that was put so well. That was that's the second time I heard that. Absolutely superb. Your thoughts, Tim?
Yeah, okay. I really like that. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me? Yes.
Oh, good. Yeah. I was going to say, I really like that clip from Martin, and it seems to me as time goes on, he gets more and more accomplished with the clips that he puts together. As you say, he's got a very, very compelling voice. And put together with the clips of music that he chooses, the message that comes over, I mean, you know, it really made me want to put on my anti-Sharia T-shirt and go out and have a meal in the local curry house.
Tim.
You know,
you
yeah,
be a
you
devil.
Know. Yes, give us a chicken gel
Get
a load of this T-shirt. Yeah, get a load of this T-shirt and I'll have a chicken gel frizzy. But yeah, I was just watching the chat room lines flash up on the screen as that was playing, and there was a lot of people who were talking about postal voting, which of course is one of the biggest mechanisms relating to voting fraud. That's certainly a huge deal over in this country, and it should be got rid of altogether. And I don't see why we have to have voting all on one day. What is wrong with holding the voting, the ballot boxes open for however long it takes? I suggested 2-3 days, but really you could have them open all week and say that's the voting week, and people, just about 99% of the population, ought to be able at some point in the week, if they're eligible to vote, they ought to be able to get down there in person. Obviously, yes. I don't include people in hospital, and there's always exceptions. Sorry,
be
sir?
Be careful. No, I want to let you know, be careful about that, because that is one thing that has led to a lot of voter fraud in the United States. We used to have our, you know, elections on one day and everything. And now what we see, you know, they've opened up the elections. You have 2-3 weeks before to vote. And what it's led to is people voting twice. There has been a tremendous amount of fraud. And that's one thing people want to do, is to stop that. So it can work both ways.
Okay. What I was going to say, Sue, is if you accompany that with photographic ID for when you vote, surely that should eliminate the problem of people voting twice, because what you do is you say if you are caught making more than one vote with your photographic ID, you know, which is hopefully going to be accompanied by other checks to ensure that you are the person you say you are on that ID, then that should eliminate 99% of the fraudulent votes. I mean, obviously, there's always going to be little holes in the system that people can slip through or corrupt officials every now and again. But if you make the penalties really drastic, you know, say 10 years in prison for assisting in a fraudulent vote in some way, then you are going to deter pretty much everybody from those sort of practices. I mean, I agree with what you say. At the moment, if you haven't got photographic ID and you allow voting over several days, obviously people can travel around between different locations and make multiple votes. But a proper voting photographic ID system would eliminate that. And something interesting, Sue, you might be able to help me out with here. I read in the news this week that one particular state, and it might have been Texas, I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong, introduced voting photographic ID, and what they found was that when they used that as part of the, I don't know, I presume it was like local elections or something, that the turnout increased fourfold, and they put that down to the fact that because everybody knew that photographic ID was being used, they had more trust in the system and they were more likely to go out and vote. And all this rubbish about poor people not being able to afford a photographic ID, I mean, that's ridiculous. You need ID to be able to do all sorts of routine things. I don't know, take out a library book or something. It's totally spurious, it seems to me, to prevent photographic on the grounds that people are too poor. I mean, have you got a view on that, Sue? Because I think that should be the very first thing that's put in place before you have your next major election. And I would hope that it gets put in place over here, although I'm not holding my breath for over here, but Texas seems to be leading the way.
Well, you see, we have been trying to do that, and they tried to do it before the last presidential election, but Obama and Eric Holder have brought each state that has tried to put that into place, along with the ACLU, which is the Civil Liberties Union, who have a lot of money, to take it to court, and they put a stop to it. And the other problem that we have here in the United States with photo ID just like in New Mexico, and there are quite a few states. Illinois just passed a law that illegal immigrants now can get a photo ID. So a photo ID, while it will prevent a lot, there are still going to be problems. Now, they're trying to impeach Holder right now, which will help. That there are so many things that you have to look at, and in the United States, so many things that have to be changed, you know, for this to happen. And, of course, the Democrats, the liberals, are fighting it because they rely on their elections with all these illegal voting that goes on. Mm. So, you know, that's a real problem, but we're working on it. And the one thing I hope England does not do either is have mail-in ballots, which we have. We have one state that everything is done mail-in ballots.
Yeah, they call them postal ballots over here, and it's
postal ballots.
That's a huge problem. Yeah.
But if you set up, you know, to where it's more than a week, they need to really set up the system to have everybody's ID. I don't think you give, do you give IDs to all your immigrants?
Unfortunately, yes, we do. We have what's called a national insurance number system over here, and they hand out the national insurance numbers like candy. The very first time an immigrant comes in and encounters local government for any kind of benefit, if he doesn't have a national insurance number, he's given one. And the extent of that abuse is such that I think we've got, 60, 70 people between 60 and 70 million people in this country, or a figure around about that sort of figure, and there are about 130 million live national insurance numbers. So that's the extent of the abuse we've got there. It's a huge, huge problem.
It's
and if
massive.
If you accompany that with massive postal fraud, which we know is happening, you do get people investigating it, but it's just the tip of the iceberg. You'll see it reported every now and again that a little one-bedroom flat above a curry house somewhere in London will have been found to have registered about 200 people for voting in the local elections. And eventually, you know, every now and again, somebody picks up on this and says, hey, there's 200 people registered at this living at this address. And they'll go and
investigate. You've got to look at it this way, Tim. How many others are out there like that? We must be talking about millions upon millions fraudulent things going on.
Sure there are, and it's only the tip of the iceberg. And of course, when the Labour government were in power, they had no incentive to investigate it because they knew very well that the more illegal immigrants they were here, or even if they weren't properly registered and likely to corrupt the voting system, if they were going to be corrupt votes, they would go in favour of the Labour government because they were the ones that were handing out all the welfare bills.
Of course.
So
there was
no incentive for them to fix that problem. And even now we've got a nominally conservative government in place, I say nominally conservative because they don't seem to be any better than the other lot, they're not really showing any signs of clearing up that mess at all. But it's a huge problem and it needs to be given top priority to rectify. I nearly said,
yeah, but we're never going to see the politicians we got are never going to be transparent. We find that some of the barriers have come down, but they're never going to be transparent like that. They're never going to let the public know how serious the problem is. And we do know. I mean, as being a public, we're privy to information. We know what's going on. And when they're trying to cover it up, and when we uncover it, we'll do so. But it's been going on for ages, isn't it, Tim? And we need politicians to be transparent with what's going on instead of trying to fob the nation off, trying to say that everything's fine. No, it's not bloody fine. These things are going on, and it just makes you get more and more annoyed with that we've got this caliber of people that's running our country and our nation with different things, like, you know, the postal things.
This is what I was saying about the short-term thinking that our political system is set up to encourage. If politicians can keep the lid on it for 5 years until the next election comes round, and maybe they'll get elected again, and even if they don't, they can probably retire to their island in the Caribbean without any comeback at all. And that kind of thinking has to be changed. It's not just one thing like postal voting, although that is important. It's the whole concept of the short-term thinking where politicians are rewarded for not making decisions that are in the long-term best interest of the country.
That's very good. Well said there. I hope you don't mind if I just interject just for one moment. I've just had a little message a while ago from Richard Millington. Kel, take that man's name. He was late into the chat room this evening.
Noted.
He's informed us that the East Anglians have got, let's see what we got now. I've just closed that down for a second. They have got next Sunday, right, they've got a meet and greet next Sunday. If you can put some details into the chat room, please, Richard, be appreciated. They've got the Facebook page, so anybody's interested, please go to there, because I'll tell you what, the East Anglians, you know, we have a good time at these meet and greets. So I hope you didn't mind. I mean, just interject. I don't want to take you through it and take your thoughts away, but I thought it has to be said.
Yeah,
we got
no
East Anglians meet and greet. So
yeah.
There you go. Richard.
Oh, go on. Sorry, I was just looking in the chat room. I just noticed something. It's just my. I'll just say this and then I'll shut up. I noticed there's somebody in the chat room called Stealth. And I haven't met that person before. I hope it's nothing to do with the stealth jihad that we hear so much about. I'm sure it isn't really. I'm sure they're in there with the best of intentions.
His eyes looking back and forth.
Resist that.
No, I think he's one of us lot.
Yeah.
But thanks for noticing. See, you know, the cat has got eyes. He's got eyes everywhere. The cat has, haven't you, Tim?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the cat's eyes. It's the cat's eyes we hear about so much in this country. You'll see them up and down the middle of the road, and I've got a pair that are just as good. So nothing gets past me.
So anyway, I'm sorry if I took your train of thought for a moment there, but I thought I had to give a shout out for the East Anglians meet and greet Sunday.
I'd pretty much covered what I wanted to say about A, postal voting, and B, the parliamentary system that allows this short-term thinking to predominate and prevents decisions being taken for the long-term good of the country. I mean, it's a problem that I'm sure our current round of politicians are not going to do anything about. But I think it needs to be kept at the forefront of our thinking, because when we're looking to change these people for a government which is more in tune with reality and in tune with the long-term best interests of the company, of the country, then, you know, we are going to have to the people in charge are going to have to make some pretty radical decisions, and I just think it's important that we look ahead. I mean, other countries do it. You look at countries like China. All right, the Chinese government may not be the most democratic government in the world, but they think long-term. They think 100 years ahead, whereas our politicians only think like 5 years ahead. You just look back... When they decided that they were going to take back Hong Kong, they were looking at 30 or 40 years ahead when the decision was made, and they didn't want to take it back straight away. They wanted the capitalist people to develop Hong Kong and make it into a big, powerful financial hub, and they felt that when the time is right, they would take it back, and they did in 1997, I think it was. That's an example of how long-term thinking can have benefits to a country, and there's no reason that we shouldn't encourage that sort of thing in our parliamentary system. Exactly how we might do it with all the details involved, I'll leave that for discussion, but I'm just throwing it in there because I think it's one of the things that has led to where we are now, and it needs to be addressed.
I agree with you.
I'd like to welcome Mr. Tommy English to the panel this evening. I know he's probably just got in from work, so I'd like to welcome him. Welcome, Tommy.
Hey,
Tommy.
Hey,
Tommy.
Well,
what can you say? Oh, is that Sue?
It's Sue
from New
Mexico. Hi, Tommy.
Sue! You tweeted me like mad today. I had 14 notifications on Twitter from you, young lady.
No, I tweeted out the show, Tommy.
Exactly. All I got on my way today was Sue from New Mexico sent you a tweet, East Anglia Radio Show. Oh, okay then. 10 minutes later, Sue from New Mexico tweeted East Anglia Radio Show. All right. 14 times. 14 times, guys. I've got the evidence.
You'll be overloading Twitter too, and it'll stop working if you're overloaded.
Yeah, well, I was in a meeting and 7 times.
Sorry, I invited people.
Yes.
Yeah, you do a great job there. Well done, Sue.
Well, I did send it to the UAF. I did say if you wanted to call in, here's the number, so call us maybe.
Oh, very good.
Au contraire.
I know, this is crazy. It's my number. Call me maybe.
Oh dear.
Right, I would also like to say Wakefield on Saturday. Whoop whoop.
Oh,
Wakefield. Yep.
But good to have you here anyway, Tom, as I know you've just probably not finished work too long ago. So it's always great to have you on the panel this evening. So, not forgetting, guys, this Sunday we've got Glenn Saffa. He's one of our great ROs, and there's something he wants to speak about, one of the Marine that's been sentenced. So we're going to have, Glenn's going to say a few words this Sunday. We're going to have him on as a guest. And it should be very interesting. So please stay tuned for this Sunday, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a very interesting show. So there you go. I thought I've got to give that a bit of a shout out there for this Sunday.
We love
so,
you, Glenn.
Sorry?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, we love you, Glenn. Cause I like Glenn. He's a nice fella.
He's a great man. Yes, Glenn is.
I've just noticed that Sue from New Mexico has posted on Twitter a link to a video from the Australian Defence League. Now, they're an impressive bunch of guys. The link is here, and I'll put it in the chat room shortly for those of you who haven't seen it. But I've actually watched this link, and it's obviously they've modelled themselves on the English Defence League insofar as they're not too keen on Muslims. Okay, tick that box, not too keen on Muslims. They've got this video with one of the EDL marching, coming down the road tunes in the background. So, tick the box there, that's good. But they're a bit more, how should I say, rough and ready, a bit more roughy-tufty than us refined English guys over here, you know.
Well...
When you listen to this message, which I'm going to post in the chat, it's really quite funny. I think the video lasts about 2 minutes. I think this is it. Let's see. I've posted it. I think that's the one. And when you see that, you'll see what I mean. Their heart's in the right place. But
well, bless them. You know, anybody, you know, the Australian Defence League have been around a while now. Maybe they've regrouped, but they have been around for quite a while. So maybe this is just a reformat of the old Australian Defence League, which they've been going, as I say, for a little while now, Tim. So, yes, people might look a bit rough and ready, but as long as their heart's in the right place and they know what the mission statement's all about, then, yeah, it's all good, as far as I'm concerned, you know. I mean, as long as they follow what we've, you know, what the whole mission statement set off with, and... all power to the Australians. Good on ya.
Yep. Good on ya. It's just the how can I say they probably have a little bit more leeway with what they can say in public compared to what we do over here, because as you know, although we like to think that we have all the good things that are associated with a civilized society, such as freedom of speech, we in fact don't have the freedom of speech that we should enjoy.
Freedom of speech? I'm not familiar with such an expression.
Well, quite so. But they don't seem to be so troubled by that in Australia. And if you watch the... Oh, actually, that's not the exact video. I've brought the link up now, and it's not the exact video I had in mind. But I'll find... No, don't worry. I'll find the link, and I'll post it.
Don't worry.
Don't worry. You know,
don't panic, Mr. Mandarin.
Don't panic.
Yeah. Here we are.
The German hanging from the building. Don't panic. You don't like
those fuzzy wuzzies. Don't like it at them.
Yeah. Hang on. Just one second, and I'm going to copy and paste into the chat room.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Oh, there we go. That's better. They were taking issue with a group called Hizbut Tahrir. With, I'm sure you've heard about them.
Yes.
They have groups in various Western countries, and I actually, I won't go deep now. I've actually written a couple of articles about them, which I'll maybe talk about at a later time. But these guys are really not too happy with the Hizbut Tahrir supporters who planned to disrupt an Australian Defence League march, and they're not afraid to say so. So I've put the link in the chat room, and it's worth a watch.
We've got to admit, as you say, with Australians, I've known a few Australians in my time, and they don't mince words, do they? Because they're not, you know, under the same sort of pressures we are, is to choose our words very carefully with the different things we say, because the way that, that we can be pulled apart because of certain issues.
Because we are talking about freedom of speech, I've uploaded in the studio something I've been looking forward to playing all day. It's 5 minutes long, but I think it kind of grasps the whole thing we're talking about. So it's okay if I play this?
Yeah?
I was going to say, if you want to, Tom, I was going to say at the top of the hour, we'll have we'll do a quick roll call down as well, so before we continue with the last half of the last half hour of the show. So if it's okay, everybody okay, we'll play that what Tommy was just talking about now.
Okay, I know Susan will love this. Okay, are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Okay, guys, here you go.
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Mohammed.
Yes, Mohammed. I was listening to the Islamic Broadcasting Network. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Hold on. Let me talk to somebody. Hold on.
It's the Islamic Whitney Houston.
Hello?
Yes, I was talking to Mohammed.
Mohammed who?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know. Mohammed Atta. He's calling me from a payphone up in heaven, banging some virgins.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
Who am I speaking with?
This is the Mirdash. Who is killed?
Yeah, Mirdash.
Yes.
Yes, this is Ned.
Okay, how can I help you?
What's up with this f***ing radical Islamic broadcasting network broadcasting right here in the goddamn U.S. of A.?
What Islamic broadcasting you're talking about?
Yeah, don't play dumb with me, Muhammad.
No, I have no idea about that.
Listen, I heard about the new rap group, Native Dean, Muslim Hip Hop, and I got some fantastic ideas for you.
You may contact the information office in the embassy.
Give me a beat. Check this shit out.
Blow up!
You may contact the information office of the embassy.
Me and my homies are bombs packed, looking for airplanes. Hijacked plastic explosives packed in my slacks.
How do you like that?
I didn't know what you're talking about, sir.
Look, Ahmed, I didn't make this shit up. It's called Native Dean. It's a new hot Muslim rap group. But they don't have strong rhymes like this. Check this out. I didn't choose Allah. Allah chose me. Like to blow up people and watch them bleed. Strap some C4 to my abdomen. Soon I'll be nothing.
Sir?
With flying skin. Don't mess with Allah. He's a motherfucker. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, listen, Haji. I'm trying to get a hold of somebody about this new Muslim rap group called Native Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fan of hardcore Islamic gangster hip-hop?
I don't like it.
Well, that's because you never heard Osama Ned Laden bust a funky rhyme. Hit it. Shiite!
I'm going down, baby. Bus stop in the morning. Big boom, baby.
No,
pieces I will blow. Stinky Taliban roaming through the land. Jews built a metropolis. We eat f***ing sandwiches.
Hello?
Hello?
Who's this?
Coolio?
The guy with the dreadlocks who sang, come on and ride on this fantastic ride, slippery slide. Is that you?
Yeah.
What you doing down there? Mixing up some anthrax, cooking up some sarin gas?
Yeah.
Damn, you are the world's happiest terrorist. What was your name again?
Khalil.
Yeah. My bad, I'm sorry.
That's okay, don't worry.
My name's Ned.
Mr. Ned, what can I do for you, sir?
Look, I heard about the latest craze, and I'm trying to call you Muslims up with some new rap tunes to spread the word, but I keep getting hung up on. Now, let me lay some on you, Khalil.
Yeah, because I'm Muslim, you know?
Exactly, Muslim terrorist. Now, here we go. One, two, three, four.
It's getting hot in here. I'm about to explode. I am getting so hot, I'm gonna blow my clothes off. It's getting hot in here.
It's good. Yeah, of course.
Hello, Khalil.
Hello?
Khalil, you hung up on me.
No, you hang up. I don't know why.
Now, Khalil, you wouldn't hang up on me to go work on one of those Iraqi drones to drop chemical weapons all over New York City, would you?
No, never. I would never do it.
Yeah, right. All right, well, hold on to your turban, because the hits keep coming.
His palms are sweaty, he's nervous, his palm is heavy. To meet Allah, he's ready and bangs 70 virgins and teddies. He puts on his dungarees, straps on the TNT, soaks them with gasoline, blows himself to smithereens. Now back to reality, hole in his cavity. Oops, he blowed up and then...
Hello?
Hello?
Khalil?
Yes?
What's up? Yes, to Israel. Oh, yeah, here we go. I got a song that's right up your alley.
Islam Nation feels frustration. Blow yourself up and feel the detonation. Strike a match and light the fuse. Islam loves you. Bust the Jews.
Yeah?
Bust the Jews. Drop a bomb on and bust the Jews. Bust the Jews.
Hello.
I realize my problem now. I've been a little too hip for the room, so let's kick it back oldie style. Yeah.
ISLAMIC, all you Muslims are crazy. ISLAMIC, Islam's full of crazy.
Hello. And that's freedom of speech.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay, I'm back. Some people appreciated it, some people didn't, Tom. And it seems like, I don't know for some unknown reason, but guys, if you've been trying to read my text and it looks like it's Chinese back to front, I do apologise about that. I like to change my symbols, and I don't know which one to change it to.
I've got a chat box. I can't even see it.
Yeah. Well, anyway... I do know that Vito Espirito is in the house tonight. Mamma mia, no Sharia, good to see you this evening, Vito, as usual. Let me see, who else have we got in the chat? And I do apologise about my, I won't write in the chat no more until I've sorted this problem out. It came up just earlier, it was a while early on, but for some unknown reason, it's become an issue. So anyway, we got myself, East Anglian's EDL Radio, Jeff, aka No Surrender EDL, we've got Agador Irritated, which I love that, Nick, it's absolutely superb. British News, my dear friend Army, it's always a pleasure to see you, bro, always. We got Cat Strangler 101, wheel! Mr. Tim Burton in the house tonight. we've also got Darren Walls. Always good to see you, Darren. We've got also Dodgy Dave, and I've always loved that name, Dodgy Dave. Good to see you, Eric Kyle. We've got Eric Kyle in the chat room this evening. We've got
every time you say that, I think you're going to say Eric Cartman. I really do. I do apologise.
We've got Golf Dogs of Kafinistan. We've got our very own Poppy. God bless you, Poppy. Always a pleasure to see you doing all your great work you do. And we've also, as I say, Kel was one of the first people to call in tonight to give me a hand because I was having a few panic issues.
You asked me to call in.
We've had very own Kel. Always a pleasure, Kel. Thank you. Doing all we should do. And of course we've got with our own shows and a great blog, and also we've got Ream Soldier. Always a pleasure, brother, always. And Tom and Kel, take that man, so he was late in the chat room this evening. Mr. Richard Millington, what's he like? Come here late and then ask me to give a shout out. My goodness me, take his name, Tom.
I would do, but we're taking that many names that our WH Smith will let us buy any pens anymore.
Yeah, well, we've got a long list of names. I want to see you all in my office tomorrow morning.
I'm going to dish out punishment, Sharia law style.
And also, we've got Stealth, which I think is an absolutely superb name, which we had a little bit of a chuckle about earlier. As I say, Vito Espirito is... I'm not sure if he's the last... I've got to admit, my list is playing me up a little bit tonight. I hope I haven't. We've also got Sue from New Mexico. Sue, if you're sitting there as well, I know you're still sitting there. Thanks for taking part in the panel this evening. And... I hope I haven't missed anybody. If I have, my apologies. It's just it keeps jumping.
Well, you've missed out Allah, because apparently Allah is always with us, according to the schools.
All right, okay.
According to these left-wing school guys, Allah is always with us.
Yeah, I'm getting a little... Tom, are you sitting in the toilet, Barney John? Because it sounds...
too much information.
Well, I'm calling from the office.
No, it's just that. No, I automatically read that what someone put in the chat room, Tim.
Yeah. It just occurred to me. Tommy works for Armitage Shanks. That's why it sounds like that. When he's...
Armitage Shanks, yeah. Armitage Shanks, ladies and gentlemen, are all the people that make, just for our listeners that might not be too sure of what you just said there, Tim, they are makers of urinals, the toilet systems. So just to give you an heads up, guys.
Yeah, he's got a good job there. It's systems analyst.
Oh, yeah.
Systems analyst. Yeah, but...
And for the purposes of the chat box, I am a supervisor at a call centre.
But anyway, I'd like to thank everybody that's in the chat room this evening, and maybe some people that I might have. I do apologise if I've missed anybody out, not forgetting our great listening audience out there. And we know you're listening. You know, I speak to people all the time and who listen in to the shows, and they love what we're doing. So that's what we'll continue to do. You know, we're getting positive feedback from the shows, and that's what it's all about, isn't it, guys? There you go.
Yes, indeed, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, what was we talking about earlier, Tim?
We were talking about
voter fraud, for one thing, and I threw in a remark about how we ought to be changing our parliamentary democracy system so that it doesn't favour short-term thinking, because that's why politicians do what they do. What gets rewarded gets done, and what's being rewarded at the moment is the short-term thinking that's completely against the long-term interests of our country as a whole. It's an unfortunate byproduct of the parliamentary democracy system that we have at the moment, and it needs to be addressed. It can be addressed, and I briefly threw in a mention about what happens in China, and not that I'm holding up China as a particularly good example of parliamentary democracy, but they think long term with what benefits their country and what doesn't. So what they do sometimes might seem a little strange to us and perhaps a little distasteful, but you can bet your life that the people who are making those decisions at the top are thinking far, far further ahead than the politicians in this country are ever likely to do so.
I agree. You know, we live in times where the politicians that we got are really not taking the information that's out there on board and working with it, and because we wouldn't be having this conversation if things was right in our countries and our nations, because of the ineptness of politicians that we see ourselves in the position we are, where people like ourselves with a radio show speak out against the things that politicians are paid big money to speak out on our behalf.
Indeed.
And do they speak on our behalf? No, they don't.
They
all say one thing and do the other.
Well, can I fire a question out there? I've been hearing this week about a lot of travellers moving to Sheffield, and they're already saying that they think that Sheffield will blow up with Muslims fighting against travellers and travellers fighting against Muslims. How come the UEFA aren't doing anything about that, or the politicians, but if we dare speak out against Islam, we're racist, but when these travellers are saying we don't want the Muslims in Sheffield, and the Muslims in Sheffield say we don't want the travellers in Sheffield, nothing's been done about it?
Well, it's quite obvious, because it's too, what's the word, too touchy. The word that comes to mind is it's too much of a hot potato for politicians to talk about. It's a hot potato. Would you not say that is the case, Tim?
Well, I'd say it's more a question that I did notice this phenomenon when somebody, I think from the BBC, was interviewing people in Sheffield, and their position was that the Romanians themselves indeed ought to integrate and assimilate a lot more than they're currently doing, and The interviewer had a very disapproving attitude towards the influx of Romanians and Bulgarians that was clearly upsetting the poor Pakistani community that was being put on. Oh no, it's ironic, isn't it? It's ironic. But of course, one of the things that I'm sure these media types realise is that you can criticise the Roma and the Bulgarians, and they are not going to go straight to violence and start burning cars and shouting Allahu Akbar and generally creating chaos and mayhem wherever they go. I mean, okay, some of the things they do could be deemed as antisocial, perhaps, and criminal, but if you criticize them, they're not immediately going to take offense about it and start breaking up the community big time. Damage, when I say breaking up, I mean physical damage to the community and to the extent that they start threatening lives. Whereas, of course, if you criticize Muslims, that's exactly what happens. They don't sit down and write letters to The Guardian or some of the more civilized things that we would do in this country. They go straight to violence, and if it's Friday afternoon and they've had a particularly inspiring sermon at the local mosque where the imam has said, you know what these infidels are saying about us? They're saying bad things about Muslims. They'll go out and start burning cars and destroying things and generally creating chaos and mayhem, beating up people in the street. And if that is what is on the mind of the main people in the mainstream media, when they take this disapproving attitude towards the Roma and give the Muslims a free pass, it's double standards, it's hypocrisy. We could have done with a little bit more encouragement for Muslims to integrate and assimilate right at the start when it became obvious that we were going to be getting large quantities of them moving into our country. We, in our tolerance, we thought that they would just integrate and assimilate in the way everybody else did. That hasn't worked out, but nobody dares to say anything about it because of Muslims' propensity to violence, whereas Roma are fair game, because we all know that individual Roma, all right, fair enough, you might not necessarily want one as a next-door neighbour if he's a criminal, antisocial alcoholic, but at least he's not going to go all jihad on your ass when you criticise him.
Good point. Yeah, so if you hear my phone going, it's just I'm just having a little a Skype just to Glenn was just asking me, going Sunday's still okay, so I just said yes, and he was just asked for time. So yeah, guys, that's very interesting. I thought I'd just let you know that we're having Glenn Saffa, one of our ROs, on this Sunday with some important information, so stay tuned for this show Sunday. But yeah, go ahead, Tim.
I'd more or less finished the
Tim wraps up, maybe another panelist can get a word in, because there's some points from the chat room that I'd like to bring up to your attention. That's all.
It's just what I was going to say. I'm sorry about that, Kel, but I was just about to mention that to Jeff. So, yeah, bring in somebody else. I'll step back for a moment.
Go ahead, Kel. Go ahead, Kel.
Well, there were some comments in the chat room which I thought were quite interesting. These were from about a half an hour ago, so I'm glad that we haven't segued into another topic. But Poppy brought up a really good point about voter ID, and this jogged my memory about something that occurred here in Canada about 5 years ago. And there was an immigrant gentleman. He was not a Canadian citizen. He's a landed immigrant at the time. And he got a voting card in his mail with his name on it. And he went to his neighbor, and he was so very excited that he was going to be able to vote in a Canadian election. And the neighbor had to explain to him that, well, you're not a Canadian, you're a Canadian resident, but you're not a Canadian citizen. And he was devastated in that he could not vote, and he did not vote. I mean, he respected Canadian law. However, if he had had more nefarious means within his spirit as a person, he very well could have taken that voter card and cast his ballot. This is a part of the voter fraud that we are facing as well. And to get back to what Poppy was bringing up, the issue of photo ID. We do not have photo ID requirements in Canada, and we're facing dire issues because of that. If you do not have identification, i.e. a birth certificate or a Canadian citizenship card, all you have to do is take a utility bill to prove that you live at this address and you can cast your ballot. That's something we're facing. So I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on that, and I just wanted to bring that to the panelists' attention. There you go.
I think it's quite a good, valid point there, Kel. Thank you so much, and thank you, Poppy, also. So maybe that's something we can discuss, as you say. That does seem to be a problem, that some of these people All they've got to do is take a utility bill, like a water bill or something like that, girl, and that they're allowed to vote. Well, they should be a bit more strict. They shouldn't be allowed. People shouldn't just be allowed to do willy-nilly like that. They should have a birth certificate at the most, that you know, so that people know exactly. Because, as you say, fraud is rife, and you know, and voting fraud is it's becoming quite a big problem, isn't it? Worldwide, globally, you know, when you talk about Canada, you talk about the UK, America, and wherever it's going on. So something needs to be tightened up to stop this issue.
Wasn't there a big scandal when Tony Blair got back in? Didn't they start saying that was some sort of voter fraud? I'm pretty sure it was Tony Blair, one of them.
Well, what you've got to remember is that when you have a Labour government in power, because they are generally well disposed to handing out welfare checks to all and sundry, that they are not going to be too bothered about stopping voter fraud, because they know that most voter fraud is carried out by people who are going to be more than likely entitled to those welfare checks. And so if they do vote, they are going to vote in favour of the Labour government. So there's no incentive for anybody on the left of the political spectrum to do anything about the problem at all, because effectively, if they do, they are going to be cutting their own throats when it comes to election time. I'm disappointed, but I'm not surprised. We nominally have a Conservative government in at the moment, and they are choosing not to do very much about it, which I think is a big mistake, because on the run-up to the next election, you can be sure that there will be tons and tons of voting fraud, because we don't have proper identification checks, because we allow massive swathes of postal voting to distort the system. You would have thought it would have been in the interests of a Conservative government to stamp down on it, because it cannot be a huge logistical problem. You just say to people, either your identification is beyond question or you cannot vote. And you make it incumbent on the individual to make sure that they have 100% verifiable identification in whatever form you specify, whether it's a passport, a driving license, fingerprint check, or something that ties you as a specific person to a form of identification before you even set foot in a voting in a town hall or wherever to vote, and you eliminate postal voting altogether. All right, there's an argument where if you eliminate postal voting, there are going to be a small number of people who will be disenfranchised. Say if you're in hospital and you just cannot move from your hospital bed, you could make an argument that you're disenfranchised. But the loss of that person's vote, we could see about doing something in extenuating circumstances, but for 99% of the population, we should say to them, you either get yourself to a polling station under your own steam, or you will not, you know, you will just not vote, because we could do away with the postal vote system altogether.
Yeah, and when you think about all the suffragettes who fought for 50-odd years to get women to vote, now none of them can be even bothered to these days.
Well, I think if you look at what happened in America, where the voting system became a lot more transparent, I think I quoted Texas and somebody picked me up on it and said it might not have been Texas. But the point was, in one of the states, they introduced a photographic ID and they had a fourfold increase in the number of people voting. And that was generally put down to the fact that people were much more enthusiastic about the voting process. They felt much more involved and enthusiastic about it because they knew there was much less chance of fraud. Now, I don't see why we shouldn't have the same sort of phenomenon over here.
I think
is it Australia where they say it's compulsory to vote? I think it might be. Here. There's absolutely no reason that we shouldn't say to people, you must vote and you must get yourself your ID in order, and then you must vote in person.
Maybe,
and
I
don't see why
we
can
cover this, or as I say, we're getting a bit close to the bar there.
Yeah.
I was just
Before you do, Jeff, I just wanted to say that logistically there should be absolutely no reason that we cannot do that in this country. Those two points, photographic ID, making sure people are 100% who they say they are, and making compulsory voting and getting rid of postal voting, logistically there's no reason why we couldn't do it, and I don't think it would hurt to press for it, to be honest.
Well,
but
there
anyway,
you go.
I'll
tell you what, Tim. Let's discuss this on another show. So we're quite close, and we have covered quite a few things. I was just going to say, just before we start wrapping it up, because I'm coming down to the bar a little bit, Kel, was there any other questions you maybe wanted to put towards the panel at this moment in time, or was that it?
No, I just I thought the issue of voter fraud was very important to discuss because that is the issue, and it would have been interesting to expand a little further on that and talk about token voting and politicians and their pandering to particular groups. There's another issue that we're facing here in Ontario, and there's a politician that her riding is heavily laden with Southeast Asians, and she's pandering to them at the expense of the wider electorate. So I thought vote pandering would be interesting to tie into this.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll underline that, and we can maybe we can have it, we can talk about it on tomorrow's show. If we're up, we can continue with this, because it's quite an interesting thing that we should be discussing, because it's so important. Not just, but it is important that that this needs to be addressed, these issues, and as I say, it's that's so important that that's discussed. Will we discuss that maybe on tomorrow's show or something like that? If that's okay with you guys. But once again, I'd like to thank everybody for taking part on the panel this evening. Kel, thank you for calling in, and I was having a moment of panic, and Kel sat by my side as he did, and as I say, and Tim, Cat Strangler 101.
Meow.
It's always good to have you on the panel.
Wolf.
And Sue from New Mexico, thank you so much for calling as well, Sue, and being a part of the panel this evening. And not forgetting our very own Mr. Tommy English, who's a little bit late tonight, and I've got to take his name, but never mind.
I don't control my roster.
And just to let people know, for Sue in particular, because she cannot see the chat room, that Sue, everybody in the chat room sends their love and well wishes, and they were thrilled to hear your voice, honey.
Oh, God bless them all. Can I real quick say the EDL is such an inspiration to America, and more people are tuning in and very excited about your show. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank everybody that is tuning in to this show. We like to get put things on the table. You know, but being a panel, we put things on the table, we discuss it quite openly, without political correctness creeping in. We like to do it in our own way. So the information is out there, and that's what we continue to strive to do, to get the truth out there, which is sadly lacking with what we see with the media, trying to cover things and this, that and the other. Well, we don't. We tell it the way it is. But to everybody who's been a part of this great panel this evening, especially Sue for calling, that's fantastic to take your call this evening. And to everybody else that's listening, and we've got Agadu was sitting listening on his device. Agador.
He's getting
what
enough
you, like. Yeah. Slap myself on the back of my legs. What am I like, Kel?
Now
my name, Kel.
He's just changed
now
his
what do you do?
Just changed his name to Agador Irritated, and
That's okay. Vito Esposito was Vito Esperito.
I would also like to say to We Are Wakefield, I look forward to seeing all six of you on Saturday at your little cancer demonstration.
There you go, Tom. As I say, hopefully we will be back again tomorrow night with another great show with great panellists as you've had this evening, guys. So it's always interesting to have a panel of what we've been doing. And I'm really down to the last couple of minutes. So with everybody, like I say, take care, stay safe, God bless you all. And not forgetting from all of us who's part of our panel this evening, come on, guys, no surrender.
No,
no surrender.
No surrender.
No surrender.
No surrender. And we are going underground. Good night, guys.
I'm to Wakefield.
Here are some...
Wrong one.
Oh, the place is falling apart. Come on, Tommy, get a grip.
Me, I didn't click it.
No, hang on. I'm down to 90 seconds and I've lost the... I've lost my tune. Where's me? Where, Carmen? It's not that one. Here we go. Archives. I thought we weren't going to go underground for a little while there, Tim, for a second ago.
Yeah, I know. It's
that
Tommy,
right
what's he like, eh?
No, what happened is I just clicked the wrong button, you know, it was just underneath, and at that moment in time, my screen froze again tonight, so...
All right.
These things happen.
Yes,
good night
for technical errors. I mean, I had that problem with my browser, and I couldn't get logged on for ages.
Yeah.
But, oh well, these things are sent to try us.
Yeah, well, you know, as Kel will say, how many times have we had these, it was, we have these issues, and we deal with it. I think we still had a really pretty good show tonight. You know, lots of things, lots
of
issues.
Yeah, some of your panelists were rather quiet, though.
who are you talking about?
It's up to the panelists to jump in. You know, we sometimes just jump in front, and you know, if there's something we want to speak, we want to talk about. That's what panel's here for. You know, to jump in at any time. That's and everybody falls over and trips over each other. But no, I think we covered so many issues, and Kel, what you was talking about, what you and Poppy was mentioned, we can continue it on tomorrow evening. So you know, we need to expand on things, and that's what we can do being a radio show.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about voting, and Remy. Is Remy still? No, Remy's not still in the chat box. But he made a point that lots of people don't vote because they think it's just going to be the same old bunch again. And I certainly can understand about voter apathy, but I'm sure there's a huge factor where voting fraud is just so prevalent that people lose confidence in the whole system. And I'm sure if we just fixed that one thing and got rid of 99% of the voting fraud by eliminating postal voting, making sure that people had to turn up in person by making it compulsory, and making sure that they had to have ID which truly reflected that they were who they said they were, then we would regain so much more confidence in the voting process. And if people felt that their vote was more likely to make a difference, I think they'd be more likely to participate. And that's certainly the case in this state in America. I know I said Texas. I may have been wrong. But the fact that the voter turnout went up fourfold when they took a simple step to eliminate voter fraud by means of photographic ID, I think that's a huge sign. What we see in America, I'm sure we'll see to a certain extent reflected over here. And I think if we just did those few things, which are easy to do, they're not going to cost a fortune, and they might well make people think a lot harder about the importance of their vote if you have to cast it in person, and it's presented as your civic duty and an obligation on you as a citizen of this country to actually do so. People might think a lot harder about it.
Well, I hope that what we've been discussing this evening, even the archives now, that people do take it on board, and hopefully there might be people out there that is in sort of some power positions that can actually put these things forward. You know, we know what needs to be done. It's quite obvious that there's some groundwork that can be done that can stop this serious problem that we've had for such a long time. And we know it's only the tip of the iceberg. We know there's literally millions of these things that's been going on. It's quite obvious and quite prominent that is the case.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're 18 months away from a general election in this country, and you would have thought that given that voter fraud tends to benefit Labour disproportionately, you would have thought that now we had a government in, all right, they're not a particularly right-wing Conservative government, but they're not Labour, and I would have thought that they would have every incentive to get rid of voter fraud just for that reason. The fact that they don't, it says to me that there's something
the
else in play.
The Conservative Party feels just like the old Labour Party did, though,
well,
with
I,
the
I
way
have
that
to,
they do
yeah.
things.
I have
it's
to say
no
I agree
different.
With that. Yeah.
We remember... Tim, we remember like Ted Heath and governments before that were pretty strict on things, and it seems like they've gone very much over towards the socialist, the Labour Party's sort of ideas, the way that they do things, to engage with the general public, that they think the softer approach maybe is the right way, but it's wrong. And we know it's wrong, and they're trying to do that. They're creating problems in the country. It's better to be firm and people understand that this is the way things are, than to be, well, you know, cowardly and the way they handle things.
Yes, I agree. It is better to be firm. I mean, the reason they're not being firm is because they think it will cost them votes. I'm sure that's the case. But I think it's quite obvious, isn't it, Tim? Well, my personal feeling is that if you are a nominally conservative government, then if you decide to take steps where you're being more firm, you will lose votes. But for every vote that you will lose, you'll probably pick up two or three from people who think, yeah, that is the way it should be done. And whereas I was apathetic about voting before, maybe I'll just bother to put my vote in this time. I think it would benefit them in the long term. But the fact they don't do it says to me that there's something else in play that I'm not taking into account, because it seems just an obvious thing to me. It seems just a no-brainer to try and get rid of the voting fraud problems in between now and 2015. And the fact they're not doing it just tells me I'm not seeing the whole story.
Tim, this is the issues that we've got.
We haven't got the high power talks that we know
that goes on that we're not privy to, and we probably would never be privy to some of the things that's talked about, because it's national interest, isn't it?
I'm not sure that it's down to not being told things. I think there is enough in the way of citizen journalism out there now to discover the reasons behind these things. And I would welcome any suggestions from anybody as to what might be stopping a nominally conservative government from getting rid of obvious voter fraud. You could easily do it by saying we're not going to have postal votes. You could easily do it by saying we're going to have photo ID for everybody. You could easily do it by making voting compulsory. Those three things would
mean going in front of the House of Lords. I mean, anything that needs to, if you need to change things, you need to put that bill through the House of Lords, and that sometimes can take forever, can't it, as we all know. That is a situation we've got with the way that politics, and probably the same as politics in Canada as well. Oh, my goodness me, Mark. Something went funny on me then. Did you hear that? It went ping.
I heard something. I mean, I'd be happy to be a bit more well informed on this, because I've a feeling I'm missing something important, because it just seems so obvious to me as something that you could do, and it should be seen as a good thing by all right thinking people in the country. And the fact they're not doing it, or not even promoting it as an election issue, or you know, get rid of voter fraud. I would have thought that would be a huge selling point for the electorate, but the fact they're not doing it just says there's something else in play, and I'm just not sure what it is.
Yeah, well, I'm sure as time goes
we'll probably pick up on this, a bit more clarified. I'll try and get myself a little bit more background on this and see what else I can come up with.
Yeah, that'd be great, Tim.
It sounds like we ought to maybe come back to this point when we've got a little bit more information.
As I said at the end of the show, is say Kel brought up what was being spoke about in the chat room, and I thought we'd spend more time maybe on tomorrow's show, when we can expand a little bit. We can get people to actually, hopefully we get people calling and maybe joining with a little, I suppose you could call it a bit of a debate that we could have on that, couldn't we?
I'd be happy for other people's perspective on this. I mean, I can see why it's happening in the United States, because the people in charge, like Obama and Sue of New Mexico mentioned, Eric Holder, they've got a vested interest in perpetuating voter fraud because it keeps them in power. If you got rid of voter fraud in the United States, you would certainly get those people out of power, without a doubt. And they know that, which is why they're pressing to keep those aspects with postal voting, people voting multiple times, people rigging ballot machines, so on and so forth. Voter intimidation, that's another big issue over in the United States.
Yeah, that's true.
That is what you expect the left to do when they're in power, because they know that those methods of voting gain extra votes for them rather than for people on the right of the spectrum. But I'm just curious as to why we haven't got it over here. But yeah, let's have this debate another day. It was an interesting show. Apart from that subject, with all the other things you were talking about with immigration and so on, I think that was shaping up to be really interesting. And I was particularly interested because of what was in the news this week about the Roma and the Pakistani business.
Yes.
Bloody immigrants.
Well, that's definitely topical at this moment in time, isn't it? Very much so.
Right.
Yeah.
Bloody immigrants. Oh dear, that's funny.
I don't know, it's sometimes, these things come out and that's where we find the humorous side of things, which gives us all a bit of a chuckle. But the Muslims, they're taking it very seriously, aren't they? They don't want the Romans roaming all over the place.
a roaming in the gloaming, as they say. Yeah.
So would you be up for that discussion tomorrow night? Would you like to take part in the panel tomorrow night?
Well, I thought I was taking part in the panel tonight.
No, tomorrow night.
I didn't really. I had a lot to say, but I'm sorry that I'm not one who tries to get her word in edgewise. I was kind of. I was just taking notes and paying attention to the chat room, and I was just interjecting when something from the chat room came up. That's all I was doing.
No, that was, as you normally do, a sterling job. As I say, it was. I've got to admit, I've enjoyed every part of this discussion we've had this evening. It's been really, and as I say, the only problem I did have is when I don't know what it was, but when Tommy came online, all of a sudden, my chat went all over the place. People couldn't read what I was saying on this. I don't know what happened there, but
Did we have that same problem when Tommy came online? Did he boot Kel off again? Is that what happened, or was that not the same? Quite the same thing.
Tommy wasn't in the studio, nor was I. I was just asked to call in as a pinch hitter at the very last minute, and we were introducing some topics, and then the panel, the studio got a little full, so I just kind of sat in a corner and listened for the most of the program.
Oh, okay. I saw where you said you were sitting in the corner. I thought somebody had put you in the corner, and I thought nobody puts Red Fox in the corner.
No. No, I think we...
We can't have that. We can't have that. We can't have Red Fox in the corner.
No, far from it.
Yeah, you were saying about Canada, Kel. Just remind me what sort of government you have in place at the moment. Whereabouts are they on the political spectrum, so that I understand this? Because I haven't really got a feel for Canadian politics in the way I have with UK and US politics.
Well, right now, Canada, we have a conservative majority government, and we have a three-party system. We have the Conservatives, and we have the Liberals, and we have the New Democratic Party. The New Democratic Party is a socialist party, and that is the official opposition. Fortunately, because we do have a majority, when bills are presented in Parliament and they're conservative-initiated, they usually get passed. However, the electorate in particular it's rural versus urban, and I don't know if that's the case in the United States as well, but what is going on right now is that the conservatives, when they try to introduce bills, immigration reform in particular, it is very difficult to win over the Toronto voters in particular, the urban voters in particular. The Conservatives are seen as racist and bigots. So that's a real problem that we face. We are facing our federal election next year, and the contender, the front runner of the Liberal, the front runner is Justin Trudeau of the Liberal Party, and we refer to him as the shiny pony. He is Canada's Barack Hussein Obama, in that he has the looks, he has the appeal, and he has the young voters on his side. He poses with university girls wearing tube tops, and he's just a groovy guy. However, he's very sympathetic to the Muslim movement. He's very sympathetic to immigration. He's very sympathetic to asylum seekers. He's very sympathetic to the so-called oppressed minority. He's very much a vote panderer, and he has absolutely no interest in protecting the integrity of Canadian values whatsoever. He's very multicultural, something that the Conservatives are trying to erase, because that was a huge mistake that was introduced in our Constitution in 1982. Stephen Harper, the current Prime Minister of Canada, is trying to rectify that. Thus, once again, we go full circle, and he's a racist and he's a bigot. So we have a lot of social issues.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah, there, Kel. I think we hit on that a little bit when we were talking about Justin Trudeau. I think on one of the other shows we was discussing that, wasn't we? It's a bit of a worry that he could come about. Who knows how things are? We very similar to like Obama. You know, could something like that regime, which Canadians don't need that, do you, Kel?
When's your next major election, Kel? When's that coming up?
It's coming up in 2014, in October of next year.
Oh, okay. All right. It's just I'll have to pay a little bit more attention to what's going on with that, because in many ways it's just as important as the UK and the US.
Of
I mean,
course.
For one thing, Canada's got a lot of natural resources, amongst other things.
Oh, you know what?
My
apologies. 1915.
Oh, 1915.
Oh, 2015,
we missed it.
I'm
we missed
sorry.
It by 100 years.
Oh, we missed
already.
It by 100 years. I'm totally messing up here. But we have, it's coming up actually the very next, and let me get this right, because I totally introduced a provincial election date. No, our federal election date is coming up May 2015.
Oh, okay. Oh, so
that's
about the same time that we're going to be having our general election over here.
Yeah.
Because I think they've made it a fixed term thing now, so that it used to be nominally 5 years, but the incumbent government could select a time in between the fourth and beginning of the fourth year to call for an election. Now I don't think they can do that. So we've got 2015. I think it's May 2015, because the last elections we had were in May 2010. So they're going to be about the same time as yours then.
Yeah.
And I think something else I did too is I am heavily invested in American politics, and they actually have their by-elections coming up in November of 2014. So I did something there too.
Oh, all right then.
Well, goodness me. Yes, I know you're quite heavily involved with the American politics, and you do follow. I know, because I've often listened to Kel when she's been on other shows, and she's really up to speed on American politics. Mm. Are you not, Kel?
I think I have to be, because living right beside the greatest nation on the planet, I live in the best country in the world, but, I mean, we have to admit the United States of America is the greatest nation on the planet because of all the heavy lifting they do globally. And they are a superpower. So, of course, I think it's within my interest to pay closer attention than perhaps most countries, and because we are their largest trading partner in particular.
Well, I think it with what we do, it pays us all to keep up to speed as much as we can with the political scene, not just in our own countries, but
global politics,
Well, certainly the larger countries, such as Canada, the US, I'm including Australia in this, because they have traditions. We all have traditions and values which are broadly similar, and they're all under threat in broadly the same way. So if we have things that happen in one part of the world that has a particular effect, we ought to be looking to see what lessons we can draw from that and maybe apply them in our politics in maybe, you know, another part of the world. I mean, one of the things...
I think that's what we normally do, though, Tim.
Well,
you know, I thought that's what we're politics...
Yeah.
You
would think
it drives each other,
well,
don't it? You know,
you would think that politicians would draw the appropriate lessons and apply them in their own countries. But what often happens is they seem to do the very opposite. They seem to perpetuate all the mistakes that have been made in the past in other countries where things have been tried and they obviously don't work. And they think, oh, we'll just try them here anyway. So they seem to always do the worst. They take the worst of everything instead of taking the best of everything.
Yeah,
now, I would have thought.
I agree with that. I was going to say it always reminds me when I think of politics, with a Genesis tune, a land of confusion, and very much so with the political spectrum. I would say that song makes a lot of sense because that is it. It's a land of confusion where politics, because they say one thing and do something different. So it is a land of confusion. With the politics, what we've got as of today, the way I look at it, in this, in the what we got with the politics, especially in this country with the Cameron regime and so forth. But that is the way that is. They like to have it confused. They like people to be confused with the politics because it keeps them in power.
Well, that's certainly true. But I think we owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to the various populations, certainly the non-Muslim populations in all the Western countries in every Western country, really. We owe it to them to try and strip out some of that confusion and present the truth in as clear a way as possible. I mean, I'm sure when it comes to Muslim immigration, for example, politicians that we've currently got would like nothing more than for it to be a completely confused situation so that people just throw their hands up in the air in despair and go off to do something different.
Oh, but and just to let you know that Agador is on the line and he's got his hand up.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I'm sorry, I was so engrossed, Kel, with what Tim was talking about, I missed that, so let me bring in Agador. It's a great pleasure to have you on the show this evening. Go ahead, you're live.
Greetings, gents. You know, been listening for a bit and really like your show. And mostly I just shut up and listen to what you guys have to say, because a lot of what you're talking about is things that I don't know about. I have my own show, and I tend to talk about things that I know about in that. But I listen to you guys talking, you know, about the things that are going on over there. And, of course, I'm a big fan of Kel, who understands both American football and Canadian football, which means both of those.
He's
a genius. All right. And, yeah, I don't know who brought this point up, but it is a brilliant one. The politicians over here in the States tend to take just the worst ideas that are perpetuated around the world and think they can make them work here. It comes, I think, from almost a guilt complex or something, where they believe that other cultures and other parts of the world are superior somehow, and that we don't deserve prosperity because we're somehow evil. So they try and bring in these ideas because they want to fundamentally transform us. And the ideas are just terrible. You see this all over the world. When every time one of these regimes falls, these leftist regimes, you hear them say the same things. The ideas weren't bad. We just didn't implement them properly.
Yeah. I'll call it myself, Agador, social engineering. That's what comes to mind. When you discuss that, I always think of social engineering, what they try to achieve within the political spectrum, but of a wider basis, a national thing, involves everybody. So, you know, I always think of social engineering that comes to mind, which Paul Weston mentioned, actually, some of his great statements before, but Paul Weston brought up the social engineer thing, which we've noticed very much in this country and probably quite on a global basis. So there you go. There's something to discuss in anyway.
Okay, well... Paul Weston, as I'm sure you know, Agador, is the chairman of Liberty GB, which is broadly sympathetic to what we do.
Yes.
But they're a political organisation, whereas the EDL are a pressure group, a protest
That's
group,
right.
And not so much a political organisation. That's not to say that the ideas that we discuss aren't political, but we're not organised as a political group, whereas
they are.
And Paul Weston is standing, I believe, as an MEP in the next election. I may need to just clarify that, but I believe that's the case.
I think he is, yeah.
And I personally, if the opportunity came along and my vote made all the difference between him getting into power and not, I would vote for him because I think he's got some very good ideas.
Well, and me as well. I would as well.
I'd vote for you too. I know what you mean.
Well, you know, fellas. No, that reminds me really of what's going on here in the States with the Tea Party movement. There are a few people here who want to form a third party, apart from the Democrat and Republican parties. They want to form a third party, but a lot of people in the Tea Party movement, in the know, really don't want to do that. They want us to research each of our candidates to see if they stand our test. And you know, not become a third party, and thereby become a target. You know, I see a political party as a chunk of iron ore that can be made into almost anything, but I see groups like the Tea Party movement and the EDL as kind of a puddle of water. I mean, you can't get rid of a puddle of water, no matter what you do.
Huh.
You can freeze it. You can disperse it. Those water molecules stay, and they'll come back. So yeah, this very much reminds me of that situation.
Yeah, one of the things about forming a third party. I mean, I can certainly see the attraction in the case of the United States. There's going to be a lot of people who are not at all happy with what's happening on the Democrat side. They're not at all happy with the fact that the Republicans seem to be totally unable to muster any opposition. So the natural thinking is, well, let's see if we can do something better with a third party. Now, I may be wrong here, but I would think that if you had a third party and it gained any sort of momentum, the votes that it would get would be mostly from the Republican side rather than the Democrat side. And so what would happen is it would weaken the Republican vote, and you might end up with a new Democrat government in 2016, whereas what you really wanted was a right-wing government, but the Tea Party took away the votes from the Republican Party. Now, I may be totally wrong on that, but I'm looking at a parallel here in the UK. We've got a general election coming up in 2015. Lots of people, as Jeff said, are very fed up with the Conservative-Liberal coalition that we have here, which is, it's nominally a Conservative government, but they don't seem to be doing anything really different from what a socialist government would have done 20 or 30 years ago. And you've got the real enemy, which is the Labour government on in the minority at the moment. But if you formed a political party and it gained some real momentum, like, for example, we have a little party called UKIP here, which is gaining ground, but it's gaining ground at the expense of the Conservatives. And so
yes,
if we went into an election with what we currently have in the polls, the Labour Party, which neither the Conservatives nor UKIP want, would probably win because they would have they only need to do nothing in order to win if the Conservative vote is split between Conservatives and UKIP. And I would suspect you'd get a similar scenario in the United States. Would you think that would be a reasonable analysis?
Oh yes. I think you're pretty well right on. I mean, another party would be kind of a larger extension of the Libertarian Party, and we've seen how that tends to pull votes away from candidates on the right and give candidates on the left a distinct advantage. So, you know, and I would rather see, and I think a lot of other people in the Tea Party movement here would rather see people coalesce more around principles than around any individual candidates, and match the candidates to those principles, not to centralize ourselves in just another party that could, in future years, become just as corrupt as the two we have now. Well, the two, a lot of people are saying there really isn't much of a difference anymore. So,
Well, I think it would be a good idea if you could convince the electorate to focus on principles, and if they were all had sufficient moral values internally to identify with that, of course. I mean, that's one of the things about political correctness and multiculturalism. Over the time that we have had that phenomenon on both sides of the pond, I guess, a lot of people have had their moral values corrupted, and they no longer know instinctively in the way that we used to maybe 50 or 60 years ago. I'm thinking about when I grew up in the 1950s and 1960s. I had a very strong sense of what was right and what wasn't. Now, I don't think I could say quite the same thing about the people who have been brought up in the last 20 or 30 years in the atmosphere of political correctness and multiculturalism. Everything seems to... you will get a lot of people out there who will argue that there is no absolute right and no absolute wrong, no absolute truth and no absolute lies. And, I mean, that's how you know they're on the wrong side, because they say that. I believe very strongly that there is an absolute right and an absolute wrong, and there is absolute truth and there are absolute lies, and that if we can't differentiate between them, then we're going to end up in a bad place. And that's where political correctness and multiculturalism is taking us, which is one of the reasons I hate it so much. And I imagine that most of us here, if they were to look closely at what I've just said in that statement, I imagine they'd probably agree. I'm happy for them to disagree, but I imagine they would probably agree there.
Well, there's a difference between respect and the social engineering you guys are talking about, and what the leftists are doing everywhere is bringing it into the social engineering place and taking it out of the place of respect. I mean, a person, for instance, is either good or bad depending on their actions, not depending on their skin color, and not depending on the box that a certain party can put them into to pander for that vote.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that was one of the things that surprised me. Changing the topic slightly, we had a lady that you probably know quite well called Oprah Winfrey.
And
all right.
Oprah Winfrey!
All right, yes, all right. Well, the point I was going to make was she appeared on British TV just recently, and she probably appeared on various shows. I saw her on a couple of shows, and what surprised me was she was just totally in favour of everything that Obama had been doing and wouldn't have a bad word said against him. And this was purely because they were of the same skin color, because she was just totally blind to the fact that he was destroying America through his actions, and she was determined to take no notice of that because it would have been betraying somebody who was of the same skin color. Now, I found that really hard to believe, because hard to understand. Because she's a woman who's made a big name for herself through promoting honesty. If I mean, this might be my perception, okay, but she seemed to me to be a person of very high integrity, and she looked at subjects in a way that a lot of people identified with, and thought, and that's why she became so popular in what she was doing. And I was surprised, really, to just hear this just total denial of the bad things that Obama has done to the United States, and I just wondered if you'd got some thoughts about that, because it seems to me that that denial is present in a lot of people over on that side of the water.
Oh well, Oprah Winfrey is, you know, the Graf Zeppelin of opportunistic racism, and just as big physically. It's just
you're being very kind.
Oh, thank you, Kel. Thank you. You know, we have a comic over here named Dennis Miller, and he was talking about Obama supporters, and he said that that these people throw down the race card so much, he's just started to call them the croupier now. It's just ridiculous. It's complete fantasy, and you know that they're dead on the issues when they have to go to this. No, when 2008 happened, the election of 2008 for our country, it was a real, I think, real maturing, because we voted or did not vote for a black man based on his policies, not based on his skin color. And, you know, I mean, I don't care what Oprah Winfrey has to say. That's what happened. And I say this because I know of some Democrats over here who said they would not vote for an N-word for President of the United States. Mm-hmm. They said that. So he was elected based on his policies, which suck. And then he was supposedly reelected based on those policies, too. That shows real maturity, and there are some people who are just not willing to let go of that convenient bludgeon that they can use. I'm sure they use it over there, too, in the UK, and I'm sure they use it in Canada.
Well, it's not such a big deal over on this side of the water. I mean, up until about the 1950s, we didn't really have many black people over here. We were a colonial power, and in the 1950s we started to bring in people from our former colonies to live over here, and there was a little bit of racism. But it wasn't a huge thing in the way that it is in the States, and I think that's because we didn't have the huge history of black slavery and so on that it seems to me like people in the States feel they have to atone for, and I'm sure that's a factor in what you were saying, that a lot of people will vote or have voted for Obama on the basis of guilt. But I don't think that's such a big issue on this side of the pond. People, if they were racist in the 1950s or so, they're certainly not at all racist, not to any great extent over here. Canada, I don't know, maybe Kel could shed some light on that, but I don't think it's a big issue in the States. A few people will feel that way, but not many, not enough to make a difference in an election, I'm pretty sure.
No, well, it's not really, the skin color here is not very much a race, but Canada will probably not ever see a black prime minister in a very long time. We're very concerned about some of the Muslims that are taking up positions in political office, so We're dealing with a mayor in Calgary who is a Muslim, and he's a socialist, and he's very, very tight with Justin Trudeau. And Canadians are kind of taking note of that more so than skin color. But, no, I cannot see a person of color running Canada in the future anytime soon.
Oh, that's really interesting, because, of course, a lot of people conflate race with the Islam issue, and that's why they're so keen to pull up the race card whenever Islam is mentioned. And there's a lot of people that say that's what they do all the time, don't they, guys?
It's the play the race card, because it stems the flow of conversation. Once you mention anything like that, that's how you stifle debate.
It comes back to what you were saying earlier, Jeff, about there are people out there who would like nothing more than for all these issues to become muddied and confused. But that's a specific example which we should point to and say there is a distinction between race and ideology, and we should be pointing it out at every opportunity and not to let people try and muddy the waters and confuse the two. Now, that's just one example.
Once again, I agree with that statement as well, Tim.
There are other political issues and political concepts which we need to be equally watchful for, and to try and separate them out where necessary, so they don't muddy the waters. And a lot of people talk about the EDL as being right wing. In fact, that's only a convenient term that people on the left of the political spectrum use because it suits them. I would say that most people involved in the EDL are more on the centre ground than right wing. They're certainly not extremists.
Well, we're not, you know, we say we're not left, we're not right, we're just right. We've been talking about politics tonight, but as I say, most people would know, that we're not politically orientated. We can talk about politics, but we're not politically driven, are we?
Well, you don't seem like you're left or like you're right. You're just correct.
Yeah, just right.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm a little bit concerned in case, because this conversation we've been having, this archive has been, it's just been ebbing and flowing and absolutely fantastic. Agathor, I'm so pleased that you called in this evening with some of the issues that we've been discussing. So it's been really, really. I hope you do it again in one of our other shows, because it's great. This archives tonight, as I say, it's gone on, and I'm just a bit concerned, because now and again, you know, Blog Talk cuts you off, as Kel knows, and it gets a bit embarrassing. So I'd like to thank you, Agathor, for calling in. Of course, Tim, for being a great panellist as usual, and not forgetting Kel as well, and is part of the archives this evening, and for everybody else that's taken part tonight. But as I'm just a little bit concerned that we're going to run out of time and get cut right off.
But before we let you go, you have a message. And this pertains to the video that was sent to us from Martin Hive, and that is the EDL Not Racist video, and there is the montage of still pictures going on, and you are featured prominently in one of them as well. And so Martin Hive wants to know, are you the hot chick in the red skirt with the big boobs? Because if you are, he would like to meet you.
No, that's me.
He would like to meet you at the Norwich Sales Center this Saturday night and take you out for supper. So, Jeff, you got a date because you're hot.
Well,
hey, free food, man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Just wear a red skirt and put socks in a bra.
Yeah, that's it.
It's too cold. I'll have to put me thermals on, Kel.
You're in there. You're in there.
Oh, I've got all red now. But, Kel, thanks for relaying that message. God bless you, Kel. And, of course, Agathor, absolutely fantastic. I know I've got your name. I was going Agathor, and I didn't. I do apologize.
that's all right. I was kind of goofing on Tommy and saying, you know, the only place I do Agathors is, you know, in the toilet. I don't do my show from there, so.
Would you like to give a quick call out for your, when you have your show, you know, so for our listeners as well, before we say goodnight?
Would you
like to give a shout out?
Sure. You know, it's the Unpleasant Blind Guy on YouTube, and I'm going to be doing something a little bit different that way pretty soon. But I'm also look for UBG Contact on the Twitter. I always put out my show links and things there, and Agathor_ also. And that's it. That's usually I put out a show a week. Sometimes I don't, but yeah, I've got one out this week, and I'm working on a Thanksgiving special, which I think a lot of people will find fun. So
that sounds great. Thanks, sir.
And
thanks so much.
I love AGG's show on YouTube. I mean, I go in there practically every day. Does he have a new one? Just love it.
But I was going to say, Kel, before we go, would you like to give a little shout out for your great shows as well and your blog, please?
Oh, absolutely. You can find me at theredfoxblogger.com, and my radio show is here on Blog Talk Radio, and I tape Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and tomorrow night my guest will be Christopher Logan of Logan's Warning. And
awesome.
On Mondays, Tim and myself, we co-host together on Red Fox Blogger at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, where we pick up the topics of what is going on within the world of Islam.
Yes, you do.
Thanks, Jeff.
Fantastic.
And it's an
Thank
awesome
you,
show.
Thank you, Kel, for giving your shout out. And also, just finally, Tim, yourself, would you like to give a little shout out for all the different things that you do? So go ahead, Tim.
Well, certainly. Obviously, a big thank you to Jeff and everything you do on the EDL shows. Yeah. And it's a pleasure to be part of the panel. And to Kel at Red Fox on Mondays, it's a great pleasure to be part of the panel on that show too. I'm looking to kick off my own Blog Talk Radio show very soon. I haven't got a definite date for it yet, but it will be called the Freedom Loving Infidel Blog Talk
Love
Radio
it.
Show. So when that all Bye. Kicks off, I do hope you'll come and visit, because I'm going to try and make it interesting and entertaining and informative, all three at the same time. You never know your luck.
And also, would you like to give a call out for your Twitter? You do some fantastic Twitters as well.
Indeed, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at followthecat at catstrangler101. And if you want to email me, I'm on catstrangler101@gmail.com. But, I'm always happy for new followers on Twitter. And if I haven't offended you on Twitter yet, you obviously haven't been paying attention. Because I've got something on there.
Well, once again, I'm glad that we've covered everything. Everybody's covered their shows, this, because it's only right. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you're listening to the archives, as you probably are, then you can catch these great people with their great shows. And as I say, Tim will probably have maybe he might even have a Christmas command coming up, or maybe pre-Christmas or something like that in the very near future. So once again, I'd like to thank everybody for their time and the effort tonight, for being here and sitting with me and discussing the issues and the EDL issues. As I say, this Sunday, I know I've been in talks with Glenn in between discussions that we've got Glenn Sapper, one of our ROs and a great, great guy, this Sunday. So for myself, from Tim, and, of course, from Agador, and, of course, Kel. I'm going to play us out with this one. What should we play? We're not going to take it anymore. How about that, guys, for our exit fee for the night?
Sounds good.
Nice.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, then. Right, from us all, well, this is my exit theme for the night. Good night, guys, and thanks so much for
good
being
night,
here with
me. Good
night,
gentlemen.
Yeah,
good night, Tim.
Good night, Kel.
Good night, Agador, and good night, Jeff. And we'll be talking
God bless
you,
guys. You, God
bless
you all.
Here
we go, guys. We're not taking it anymore.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We're not gonna take it!